Ginny Gerbasi.
And I'm Tim Watt.
And we're
the Irreverends.
Welcome to our podcast. This is the week, the first, what am I saying?
It's the first week of the liturgical year. Advent 1.
It's the week approaching, right, the church new year.
Church Advent new year.
So wouldn't you expect, Tim, that approaching Advent, you know, Advent, the season of Christmas shopping, that the readings would be all about
the angel
coming to
Sweet
Mary.
Baby Jesus.
Yeah.
And
the angel coming to Joseph. Shouldn't we have those kinds of gentle, kind readings? The kind that show up in Christmas ornaments and Christmas songs.
Yes. That's the kind that you would expect. That's not the kind we
get. Oh, no. So the lessons, for those of you following along, that we're going to work on today. Oh, by the way, it changes to year B.
Year Bravo.
So, the lessons are Isaiah 64, verses 1 through 9. Tim had a fancy word for that. It's
Trito-Isaiah.
Yeah,
as opposed to Isaiah or Deutero-Isaiah.
Right, people of Isaiah. And the gospel is Mark.
And that comes from a wonderful, heartwarming little part of Mark towards the end, known as the Little Apocalypse.
Bum, bum, bum. And that would be chapter 13, verses 24 to 37. Everything in Mark is going to be little, right?
Well, Mark is very fast.
It's very short.
It's rapid.
And they use the word immediately all the time.
Yeah, well.
Immediately, you know. And immediately. Now that I've said that, I'm not sure the word immediately appears in this week's gospel.
Well, we'll see.
We'll see. So, why don't I read Isaiah?
I'll read Isaiah.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
Yeah, in my best Isaiah voice.
Isaiah's dead. We don't know what he sounded like. The many Isaiahs.
I would guarantee he didn't sound like an American in the Mid-Atlantic.
And he wouldn't have been speaking English.
Right.
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 But you don't have a Mid-Atlantic accent because...
Because I'm from Idaho.
Right.
Yeah, I have basically no accent. Although it comes
out
every now and
then. Everybody thinks they have no accent.
Yeah.
But actually, I would sort of agree with you. Yours sounds just like mine. And mine would be Mid-Atlantic, and we're just sort of the non-accent people.
The non-accent people. But enough about us.
Yeah, let's talk about Isaiah.
Isaiah. Oh, that you would tear open the heavens and come down, so that the mountains would quake at your presence, as when fire kindles brushwood and the fire causes water to boil. To make your name known to your adversaries, so that the nations might tremble at your presence. When you did awesome deeds that we did not expect, you came down, the mountains quaked at your presence. From ages past, no one has heard. No ear has perceived, no eye has seen any God besides you who works for those who wait for him. You meet those who gladly do right, those who remember you in your ways. But you are angry, and we sinned. Because you hid yourself, we transgressed. We have all become like one who is unclean, and our righteous deeds are like a filthy cloth. We all fade like a leaf, and our iniquities like the wind, take us away. There is no one who calls on your name or attempts to take hold of you, for you have hidden your face from us. You have delivered us into the hand of our iniquity. Yet, O Lord, you are our Father. We are the clay. You are our potter. We are all the work of your hand. Do not be exceedingly angry, O Lord, and do not remember iniquity forever. Now consider, we are all your people.
That is such good stuff.
It's so heavy.
Like, heavy in like the hippie way? Heavy, man.
Whoa, man.
Like that?
That's heavy.
So, I love Isaiah. I love some of these marvelous poems, songs in Isaiah. You know, there's Isaiah and then Deutero-Isaiah, and then this is what?
Trito.
Trito. Like Isaiah, third?
Isaiah. Yep.
Okay. So Isaiah obviously is in two big movements, and then there's this big sort of miscellany part. The two big movements of Isaiah cover the time before God's people were exiled to Babylon. So the whole first movement of Isaiah is where the prophet is saying God's judgment is about to come down on God's people. And then the people get exiled to Babylon, and then we have the second movement of Isaiah, where the prophet begins to speak comfort to people. God hasn't forgotten you. God will find you.
God will bring you back.
Oh, and there's that comfort, comfort ye, my people.
And make straight the way of the Lord.
It's gorgeous. This is in the miscellany chapter. But when I was reading it to prepare for our time together today, I felt for the first time like I was one of God's people who couldn't wait for God to come back. You know, aside from when I was a little girl and middle school or whatever, which is like so many years ago. But when I was like in middle school and I used to read some of the Psalms that were about my enemies and I have enemies and God would rescue me from my enemies, those felt real. Because when you're
take
in middle
me out
school,
of the pit, put them in it.
Exactly. Right. That's right. Or even the, I drench my couch with tears.
Yeah.
That's very middle school.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
We're all in it, yeah. Right?
All the hormones are raging, and every breakup is the end of our lives.
Right. And the couch drenched with tears. I just so remember, like, the pillow drenched with tears, you know? It was so, I felt so connected. I felt so wronged. But as an adult, I, as a privileged, educated, professional white woman who grew up in an educated middle-class family, I have not particularly felt oppressed and super anxious for Jesus to return. To me, the stories about Jesus returning or God returning or those metaphors have felt more like end-of-the-world things.
As opposed to an aspiration?
And now, in a world where I feel like everything has gone crazy and, you know, it's not just global warming and all the fires and the earthquakes and the hurricanes.
And North Korea launching a missile that can now hit us in Washington, D.C.
Well, so I was first just starting with the natural disasters.
I was going to move to... I took us there.
Yeah, you took us right there. Like, I had no chance to, like, build up to that. I mean, there's so much suffering, and it's so wrong, and it's so wrong-hearted, and it's so... so not what God has in mind for us, that in the context of this, when I read this, oh, that you would tear open the heavens and come down so that the mountains would quake at your presence, as when fire kindles brushwood and the fire causes water to boil, to make your name known to your adversaries so that the nations might tremble at your presence. I, for the first time, really, in my adult life, have felt myself yearning for this. Yearning for it as if I finally understand what it's like for people who are oppressed by where the world is turned against them.
That they would want a wildfire?
Yeah.
Have you ever been in a wildfire?
No.
Or near a wildfire?
So I have.
They're
when
terrifying.
We lived in California, we lived in the Salinas Valley, and I remember, you know, like the hills during most of the year are brown, tall brown grass. And I do remember fires, though they weren't enough to be reported on anything but the local news. I do remember fires, and you could smell it. You could, when it got close enough that you could see it, it was kind of frightening.
Yeah.
I remember the year we left, there were bigger fires so that we would have ash in our, like, sweep away the ash from our patio. But I've not, like, heard one or felt one or been near one.
Growing up in the inner Mountain West, they're just a fact of life in the summertime, and they're always terrifying.
Right.
And
what do they sound like?
Trains. They sound like, it sounds almost mechanical.
I mean,
if they're big enough, it just is like this roaring sound.
Right.
And just absolutely horrifying.
So you've been to the Holy Land. Is that what the... did they have wildfires? Like, would wildfires, like, started by lightning or something, have been something they...
I would assume in certain parts of it.
Certainly they had earthquakes.
Yeah.
Because they talk about... or volcanoes. I don't know if there are volcanoes there. They talk about the mountains trembling and smoking.
Yeah, and I mean, the whole Holy Land's in the middle of the Great Rift, which is geologically...
boy, isn't that a nice name? The Great Rift.
Yeah.
In every meaning of that word, right?
Didn't intend it that way.
Yeah. Well, it's like how talents, like the story of the talents, is not really about... a talent was a measure of money, but Becky called it a false cognate.
Yeah.
The Great Rift is a false cognate that actually works on another level. But anyway, for the first time, Tim, I had the sense, a glimmer of a sense, of what it must have been like to be an oppressed people, aching for God to tear open the heavens and show God's self to be real and mighty and show the leaders of the world who God really is. And I ache for that now because there's so much false religion. There's so much false Christianity. There's, you know, the idea that Islam is about killing people is just offensive and false. The idea that Christianity is about dividing people and taking money from poor people and, you know, that whole prosperity gospel, it's all so gross.
It's insidious.
And I ache for God to show God's self in a way that's just definitive. And I never, except when I was in middle school, I really never felt that until now. And this is stunning, this, when we get to this, but you were angry and we sinned. Because you hid yourself, we transgressed. You know, we want to say, well, God, we didn't really know what you wanted, or we didn't think you were real, or you...
He was pretty direct in, you know, all the stuff.
Well, like the Ten Commandments, like the gospel. I mean, God has made God's self clear over and over again to humanity. But it's like what we want is an engraved something directed to us, or a dream.
An idol that looks an awful lot like us.
Well, there's that. That we refuse to believe that God's message is for us and that it's real. And so we say, well, you hid yourself. Well, God isn't hiding God's self. God's present everywhere in everything. We just don't want to believe it.
The interesting thing in this is, I mean, there's just such an obvious counter narrative. Isaiah is calling for God to make himself known, but Isaiah is also reminding us that we are the ones who
transgressed
sin. We are the ones who are in iniquity, and it just comes down to the fact that in that case, we are the ones who should be turning around.
Well, we all fade like a leaf, and our iniquities, like the wind, take us away.
Right.
There is no one who calls on your name or attempts to take hold of you, for you have hidden your face from us. Like, we let our iniquities, the things that distract us, our careers, greed, the search for power, fame, all that stuff, we let them blow us away, and we forget call your name, and we blame it on you.
Yeah.
We say you hid yourself.
Even though it's really the iniquities that have created, that create a fog that hide God from us.
Yet, O Lord, you are our Father. We are the clay, and you are our potter. We are all the work of your hand. Do not be exceedingly angry, O Lord, and do not remember iniquity forever. Now consider, we are all your people. Doesn't this sound like the way kids talk to their parents?
It is, and this is like, you know, having grown up Catholic, well, you know, at least teenage Catholic, and hearing over and over again the words of the song, Abba, Father, this is where that comes from. You are the potter, we are the clay.
Right.
Ever heard that song?
Right. So sing a little bit of it for
Abba,
me.
Abba, Father, you are the potter, we are the clay.
So this is like 1970s Catholic music?
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
like
post-Vatican
II, like
the guitar, like the nuns with the guitar. Yeah, that's...
Yeah,
yeah, I don't think we're going to be singing that at St. John's right away.
It's the reading for this weekend.
Yeah, we could talk to Sam.
The time is ripe for
Abba
Father.
Not going to do it. But it's just like what kids... This is reminding... It's not really reminding God, because it's not really like God needs to remember who God is. But it reminds us who God is. That even though we are swept away by our iniquities, we are God's people. And God made us. God knows how fragile we are and how easy it is to be swept away by everything that's around us, including fear. So, Tim, I'm all in this Advent because I feel like for the first time in a long time, I welcome this whole, like...
This waiting time, this
Well, or this, like, the time is coming and you don't know when it is.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. Because now I'm eager for it.
Interesting.
Yeah. Which is sort of a segue to our, what did you call it? The small...
The little apocalypse. Lil Apocalypse.
Like, isn't that a rapper?
That's my rap name. I'm Lil Apocalypse.
Catchy.
Yeah.
How do you spell
I would be the most terrible rapper on earth.
I'm not sure Lil Apocalypse.
Lil.
Well, Lil.
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 Yeah.
Lil
Puck. Lil Puck. Sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry, everybody.
Yeah, wow. That's really catchy. I'm sure it's going to catch on, Tim.
Yeah,
yeah, good luck with that.
There will be no rap career.
I'm sure
for
you're
going to
be. I'm sure it's going to work out really well for you. Okay. Now, I'm going to read one of the first works of Lil Puck. The Gospel According to Mark, starting with chapter 13, verse 24. And I'm not going to rap this.
Thank you. That would be horrible.
I know. Okay, so when I was in high school, I worked at a Hallmark store. And one of my favorite things to do was to wrap presents because people would come in on their way to a wedding or whatever, buy something, and I would wrap it.
That's a different kind of rapping, you know.
But so I told my kids once when they were little
and
we were wrapping presents, they were like, Mom, you're so good at rapping. And I said, and it was rapping with a W. And I said, well, I used to be a professional rapper. And one of my kids thought I meant like, which is completely hilarious.
Well, you just went totally Paula Abdul on that. That is not rap at all.
But that's, but like, I'm 53 years old. Like, that's what it was to me. Okay. So, Jesus said, but in those days, after that suffering, the sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light. And the stars will be falling from heaven, and the powers in the heavens will be shaken. Then they will see the Son of Man coming in clouds with great power and glory. Then he will send out the angels and gather his elect from the four winds, from the ends of the earth to the ends of heaven. From the fig tree, learn its lesson. As soon as its branch becomes tender and puts forth its leaves, you know that summer is near. So also, when you see these things taking place, you know that he is near, at the very gates. Truly I tell you, this generation will not pass away until all these things have taken place. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away. But about that day or hour, no one knows, neither the angels in heaven nor the Son, but only the Father. Beware, keep alert, for you do not know when the time will come. It is like a man going on a journey, when he leaves home and puts his slaves in charge, each with work, and commands the doorkeeper to be on the watch. Therefore, keep awake, for you do not know when the master of the house will come, in the evening, or at midnight, or at cock crow, or at dawn, or else he may find you asleep when he comes suddenly. And what I say to you, I say to all. Keep awake.
So again, it's really interesting that we start the new church year at the end, as we talked about
at the
a little
end.
Bit. Yeah, because this passage happens in between Jesus teaching in the temple in Jerusalem and his passion and crucifixion. So this is right in between. This is the last time that he has for teaching his disciples before he dies. And then, of course, is raised from the dead 3 days later. So this is kind of this important little piece. And the interesting part about all this is that it pulls these different images actually from the prophet Daniel.
Right.
So there's this continuity that happens, especially given the fact that Daniel is a response
to... And Daniel is in the Hebrew Bible.
Yes, Daniel's in the Old Testament. And Daniel is a response to... it was probably actually penned during or shortly after the exile to Babylon, but it really references kind of a time of political oppression of Israel, of the Jewish people by a foreign power. And Jesus happened to come also at a time where Judea was under a foreign power in mm-hmm. terms of Rome. So it's kind of this whole expectation in between thing where the world's really, really bad. And talking about what you were just saying, how there are all these it's just this really strange, awful time in the world. right now that we're in. So this kind of really speaks deeply to
this. This is when that this form of literature is called apocalyptic literature. And it arises in those kinds of times when there's a people.
There's a desire for a restoration. There's a desire for God.
And more than just a tweaking, more than just a new administration.
Burn it all down and start it up.
So the sort of images of fire, like a refining fire, or the way that farmers will burn a field, you know, to get rid of the crop and start over. The way in which it's one of the just this great visual metaphor for sweeping away.
And going back to the conversation earlier about wildfires, the other cool thing about afterwards is watching the restoration of the forest. Because the grass creeps in, and then the wildflowers, and then the trees slowly come in, and it's just beautiful.
Right.
I mean, it's terrible. It leaves this horrible, horrible scar for a year or two, but then life happens.
So that's one of those, thank you for describing that so beautifully, because that's one of those things where I say, of course resurrection is real, because we can see it everywhere. And here on the East Coast, we see it with spring, when the winter looks so dead, like deep in the winter, where the tree, you're just absolutely convinced there's no life anywhere. And then a little bit of green. So a field, you know, a hillside that's been scorched.
You know, the thing that I remember growing up, I was, I think maybe five or so, six maybe, when Mount St. Helens erupted.
Oh.
And, you know, I grew up in Idaho, so we were right across, and ash, I remember ash falling, and we actually were up in a little ghost town in the mountains the day that it erupted, and we heard it.
Really?
You know, like 700, 8 miles away, just like this boom, boom, boom. And I'm like, what's that? And then, you know, the radio came on, and, you know, and it's, we knew that it was erupting. My aunt and uncle lived in a town in Western Washington, not too far, called Richland, and they were covered, inundated in ash.
Right.
But the whole blast zone, because half the mountain slid down.
Right.
You know, the one of the faces of the mountain slid down. We were able to visit it several times as I grew up. And at first, it was just a complete desolation, like a moonscape.
Right.
Powdery ash everywhere.
Right, gray.
I remember there was this cabin where you could actually see the flash imprints of the people who were in the cabin.
Oh, my God.
They eventually took it down.
Oh, God, that's creepy.
But I remember this, right? And then, like, going every few years growing up, just watching the life creep back into it. Now if you go to that area,
you'd never know.
It's just covered in meadow.
And you have to be shown. They have to do, like, those overlaid photos to show you.
Yeah, this whole thing. So
that's resurrection.
That is resurrection.
That's life from death. And that's just one example. But this metaphor of we really just have to wipe it all out, wipe every trace out and start over, is a yearning. I mean, I understand it better now. A yearning that people would have had.
Right.
And
have had throughout history. I mean, this was certainly a comfort to people of African descent who were enslaved by our people.
Well, and why the character of Moses was so important.
Yeah, and also why passages from Isaiah were important.
Right. But so what's interesting is that Jesus is even quoting, and when I read it, I didn't say where there were quotes, but like the phrase, the Son of Man coming in clouds is in
Daniel.
Quotes, and that's right from Daniel.
Right.
So why do we get this at Advent? Oh. I mean, I'm saying that I get it now. I get it better. I love the idea of starting over, of like, God, show yourself definitively, and let's just get this whole thing restarted. You know, let's reboot.
Well, Advent is cool because it's like this multi-layered thing. Our society is so engaged in gathering presents and decorating this time of year.
Oh, yeah, the Christmas shopping season.
You know, and the Christmas songs are already on.
Oh, God, they've been on.
All that stuff.
You sound naive. They've been on since October.
Right. Well, anyway. So the church in Advent is reminding us that, you know, much as we are looking forward to the birth of Jesus, we are also looking forward to the return of Jesus. And this is the way that the church reminds us that Advent is about both those things. Right. Yes, we are 4 weeks away
from the baby.
From the baby.
Right.
From sweet baby Jesus. But we are also...
I caught that movie reference.
At every moment, imminently waiting for Jesus to return and restore the world.
And, you know, I'm just ashamed to say here I have been a priest for 10 years, and I never really... I've preached that, but I never really...
Felt it?
Felt it in me. Like, that just felt like end-of-the-world stuff that I wasn't really interested in. And I didn't really feel it until now. And I'm going to think on that this Advent.
That's...
So let's do a Lectio Divina.
Okay.
And...
Your turn to pick.
I will pick... And so while you remind us of what the first thing is, I'm going to find a little phrase.
So the first thing we will do is read, and that's the Lectio part.
Okay. I sort of knew this, that this is what I was going to pick as soon as I said it, and I don't know why. It's not like I already
Not so random?
No. Well, no, when I was reading it, I thought this is interesting, but I don't really have anything particular that I know that I want to say about it yet. But here we go. From the fig tree, learn its lesson. As soon as its branch becomes tender and puts forth its leaves, you know that summer is near. So also, when you see these things taking place, you know that he is near, at the very gates.
From the fig tree, learn its lesson. As soon as its branch becomes tender and puts forth its leaves, you know that summer is near. So also, when you see these things taking place, you know that he is near, at the very gates.
From the fig tree, learn its lesson. As soon as its branch becomes tender and puts forth its leaves, you know that summer is near. So also, when you see these things taking place, you know that he is near, at the very gates.
And so the second step is meditation. Thinking on the passage for to find those words or word that are speaking to us.
So for me, the word tender... As soon as its branch becomes tender, that's, wow. You know, I know that this is trying to, is capturing that thing we were talking about a minute ago about spring.
Right.
You know, that you go from sort of the brittle harshness of winter and what looks like death to the signs of tenderness. You know that spring is near. And I know that what Jesus is saying here is look for the signs around you. You know, you'd get this when the signs are spring.
Right.
Look for these other signs. But he didn't pick the sign of things dying.
No. Nor did he pick the more obvious things that we think of with spring, like we see the crocuses and the tulips and daffodils start pushing up.
Well, or the animals.
It's something that you'd have to almost just, I mean, you have to reach out and feel the branch to feel the tenderness. You have to extend to find it.
Right. What about you? You want me to read it one more time?
The phrase that sticks out for me is, he is near.
You know that he is near.
He is near. And the reason I think that sticks out for me is because underlying both of these passages is an affirmation that even though we have strayed and have really hidden God from ourselves by ourselves, God is still here. God is near. Mm-hmm. God's return is always imminent. And I think that that might be what I'm being called to consider during this Advent, where you're feeling this need for renewal. I'm feeling the need to feel that closeness, that imminence.
So that's the last step, right? Like what you're called to do from the reading.
I skipped ahead.
You skipped ahead. But that's just you.
That's me.
You know, you're always like way out there.
Gotta go.
Whereas I'm always a little bit behind. Okay, so what's the third step?
Well, is that the contemplation. Okay.
And the fourth step is what do you feel called to do? So you feel called to recognize the nearness of Jesus.
Yeah. Well, the fourth step's prayer, but...
Okay. So, wow. So what do I feel called to do or what do I pray for from it? What should I do? Because, I'll do both otherwise and just talk.
Do what you're called to first, which I think we talked a little bit about.
Yeah. Then. Yeah, that I just feel more aware. I'm like all in this Advent on the idea of burn it all down. Let's get Jesus in here. What's my prayer? My prayer is what I see these texts as about hope, like this fiery, passionate hope that's captured in these images. And so my prayer is for those who who feel like there is no hope and that we're just in the winter where everything's brittle and dead and there's no life coming, to have hope. And it's consistent with you saying that Jesus is near, that any day now, this false world that we have could be burned away.
Renewed.
Yeah.
Refined.
Yeah, like a refining fire, not like those, you know, Hollywood movies, but like it could all collapse. I think we're seeing it a bit in like the way all of this misogyny and sexual harassment and sexual assault stuff is coming forward. And there are people who may feel like everything's collapsing and they don't know what to do, but it feels like refining fire to me. So my prayer is that people would have hope. What's yours?
Well, my prayer is that people would realize that even though they're waiting for this to happen, your refining fire, that even still, God is with them. God is with us now in this moment, even in our despair about the way that the world is with just everything that's coming out in the news day after day after day, that God sits in all that with us if we only but recognize it and give space in silence, maybe even.
Well,
in the business of especially this pre-Christmas season.
Well, and of course the phrase God is with us is Emmanuel. And Emmanuel is coming.
Right, but also has been, is, right, and ever shall be. World without end, amen.
Amen. Well, all right then. Okay, I guess we'll see what next week brings.
I bet it brings Advent too.
I bet it will. Or it could bring Jesus any minute.
Any moment.
Yeah. All right.
Look for those tender shoots.
Yeah. Okay, bye.
Thanks. Bye. From the fig. I can't read
the
today.
The fig.
The fig.
That's what they had in Idaho. Figs.
We didn't have figs. It's too cold in Idaho for figs.
Did you have fig Newtons?
Yeah, we had those. Yeah. I could eat a carton of those easy when I was growing up. All right.
Okay.
And scene. You're not helping here.
I'm sorry.
Get it out. Get it all out.
From the fig. Okay.
From the fig.
Okay. Whew.
All right.
Reach for the stars and pull them down. All right. Look how serious I am.
Are you done?
Okay. I think I'm done. I think I am. Yes.
Jimmy!
Get a hold of yourself!
Behave!
Okay. I'm behaving.